Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Joe Giglio with you. We got Tucker Bagley behind the glass. And, of course, John Johnson on the updates tonight. Yes, the rumors are true, everyone. Ben Simmons hit a three-pointer in a real, doesn't count, but it's a real basketball game tonight. And it was actually a legitimate three-pointer. He wasn't, it wasn't even a corner three. It was more of a side three in between the top of the key and the corner. And he was wide open, and he hit it, and boom, the crowd erupted. So that's a major story tonight. We have someone on the line, so we're going to talk to in a minute or two that was at the game tonight. A historic event for Philadelphia sports. That's coming up. We have Tucker's take of the night coming up around 9:20. But right now, we're going to start doing this every week. So every Friday night, did this last year, but we didn't have a follow-up. So I would guess the takes. Basically, Friday night, I guess what everyone, or what someone at least, is going to be talking about the following week, whether it be Monday, Tuesday, post-NFL weekend. So Friday night, I guess the takes. And then Tuesday, we're going to come back, and we're going to see how I did. So here is what I said on Friday night. The first one was about the New England Patriots. Here it was. Number one, you're going to start hearing the Patriots might go undefeated rhetoric start when they win by about 30 in Washington on Sunday and they go to 5-0. So I'll give that a half a bell here to Tucker because I haven't heard anyone actually say this, but I think we should be saying this. Look at the Patriots schedule. There's a lot of bad teams on there. Now they have to come to Philadelphia. That will be a difficult game. They have to play Dallas, which will be a challenge. They have to play Kansas City and Houston, all coming up, I think, from the middle of November on. But the next few weeks, they get the Giants on Thursday night. They're already the best team in the NFL. They get the Giants in a short week without Saquon Barkley. They're winning again, Tucker.
It's wild. I feel like all the teams that are either undefeated or 4-1, they've had such easy schedules.
Yep.
I don't see any team that's really pulled ahead this year that's had to play another couple playoff opponents.
I think we're down. Were we now down to only two undefeated teams?
Yeah, it's the Patriots and the 49ers.
Yeah,
who are only 3-0 or 4-0 because they had their bye already.
Right, and the Niners have played who? Cincinnati, Tampa, a Roethlisberger-less. Is that a word?
Roethlisberger-less.
That's a lot. Yeah, a Ben-less Steeler team, and then last night, what's become a dysfunctional Browns team. So, yeah, they're undefeated, but here it is. Here's the schedule for the Patriots coming up the next 3 weeks. Giants on Thursday night, win. At the Jets, win. Browns at home, win. The Patriots are going to get the first half of the schedule done undefeated. So that may have been a little premature on that take, but that one, that is coming. All right, my second take this week, I believe, was about Andy Reid. The second take you will hear somewhere around the NFL on Monday is that Andy Reid is one of the 10 most important and impactful NFL coaches ever. Andy Reid's going to get his 200th win on Sunday night when the Chiefs win.
Mm.
He's got Mahomes rolling, and he really has had an amazing career. All his assistants and what they do, Andy Reid gets a lot of credit for what he's done when he wins on Sunday night. 200 wins for Andy Reid when he beats the Colts on Sunday. Nope. You know what? Here's where I forgot. I forgot about this. There's always one home Andy Reid game a year that his team inexplicably loses for no reason. Now, the Colts are good. They're well coached. Frank Reich done a great job, and they had a great game plan on Sunday. Mahomes didn't play well and got hurt. But, man, I'm telling you, everyone had those Andy Reid pieces queued up in their content management systems, Tucker. Everyone had them.
ESPN was already writing oral histories about his life and his career.
They just couldn't publish them because he seemed playing like crap on Sunday night. So, Andy, that was a take that you did not hear this week. The third one was about the Philadelphia Eagles. And then the third thing you're going to hear, and I think it will be probably an overreaction, but I think the Eagles are going to look good enough on Sunday that we're going to start talking about the run coming and how they're back and they're good and they're about to go and handle this three-game road trip. I think we're going to need to see more before I believe that. But they're going to look good enough against the Jets that we're going to start to believe the Eagles have turned the corner. Well, you know what? This one's like a half a buzzer. Because no one's really saying this except I came in here tonight and Tucker's like, yeah, they're good. They're capable of dominance this year. Tucker, you're the one with the take.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Actually, I heard Mark's though. Here's the weird part about the win. It was more positivity versus negativity than exuberance. It was like we were fighting with each other yesterday as I was listening to the station on how good the win was, which is weird.
Yeah, I mean, it was never a game that was truly in question. I don't think the Eagles looked as good as people expected, but like I said earlier, they outclassed a team that they were clearly better than.
Yes, which is the objective there. Now, I think the biggest reason why we didn't hear much of that projected take is because the offense didn't do much. If the Eagles scored 31 offensive points, like the defense doesn't put the ball in the end zone, we're having a different conversation. Like, let's say Wentz has 100 more yards, 2 more touchdowns. We're just talking differently about the Eagles. Like, we're couching it by saying, well, it was the Jets, but we are talking differently. Let's talk to Mike in Westchester, who is on WIP. Hey, Mike.
What's up, Joe?
How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Joe. I'll tell you, I'll switch the subject a little bit because I'm getting tired of talking about this nonsense with the Phillies. How about the playoff baseball, Joe? It's pretty darn good.
It's been great. The NL has been great. And then I love tonight that Tampa looks like they're going to try to push this to a game 5. It's great.
Doesn't it? I'm telling you, it just seems to be it sets up well for the Yankees. It really does. It just really does. Because Zach Greinke is an absolutely horrendous postseason pitcher. And I could not see the Astros pitching him in Yankee Stadium.
Well, I mean, I think you're right on that. And here's the thing about if this goes to 5 with Tampa and Houston, they're going to have to use Gerrit Cole in Game 5.
Exactly. Right.
Obviously, Verlander tonight, and I would just think rationally that means they'd have to start Greinke in Game 1 against the Yankees. Yep.
Wow. And I don't see any of the National League team overcoming the American League. I just think I just don't see it. The Yankees are on, man. I don't know if anyone's better than them, top to bottom lineup, you know?
Well, the lineup is amazing. Mike, I was looking at it on Saturday. I was watching a little bit of their game against the Twins, and they were batting Gary Sanchez 7th, and he's one of the best, power hitters in baseball. And then they had their 9-hitter. His name was Gio Urshela. He had a higher OPS this year than Bryce Harper, which, look, Bryce Harper's better, but here's the thing. Their 9th-place hitter had a higher OPS than Bryce Harper. It's nuts. Meanwhile, the Phillies are batting Brad Miller cleanup in September.
Yeah, I think that speaking of Capper, I think it dumps on him too much. I don't know why Klentak's not at the top of everybody's chopping block. Because he's the one who hired all these. He's the one who hired Gabe Capper. He's the one who made the poor decision with the rotation. He waited till the last minute and brought in junkyard, scrappy players. As I said, it's like, I don't know what, and Capper has his flaws. And I think the main problem I have with the coaching staff is Matt Klentak didn't put an experienced bench coach there who had some previous managerial experience. It would have helped Capper. And he didn't do it. I don't know why he didn't do it. I mean, they did it for Charlie when he was with Jimmy Williams his first year.
Yep.
I mean, the two of them. I mean, no, that's just,
Mike,
to me,
it's fair.
Doesn't make any sense.
It's fair. And they didn't do that. And the frustrating part is, that you're right about the way the team was built. And the crazy thing is, it's one thing if Middleton spent the entire last week evaluating everything, but seemingly the way all the reporting is going, it's only about Kapler. And that just seems like it's just silly.
Is Kapler the one who signed Tommy Hunter and Pat Neshek?
He is not. Is he the one that didn't acquire a real starting pitcher at the deadline?
And you know what? You want to look at this? He's the one who signed Jake Arrieta.
Yep. I mean, look, over the last 2 years, I think last year's team was well below average, and then this year's team was, at the start of the year, above average, and then it became pretty much an average team by the year end. Like, that's on the front office.
Why did he not do anything immediately when he knew the team was kind of going the other direction? This team was, like, what, 12 games over 500 at that one point in May?
I think so. I think it was maybe 11, but you're right, like 33 and 20 or something like that. Something like that, 33 and 22, something like that.
When they started, when you lost McCutcheon, they didn't do anything to kind of, I guess, brace that fall. It propelled them where they were, behind, had no chance. And then by the All-Star break, that horrendous series in Miami, it was almost, they were always going to be in it because, there was a lot of mediocrity in that naturally. But I'm telling you, Joe, I'm worried for this team because they are not set up for the future at all. You look at the other teams, the Mets, the Nationals, They just seem to pick guys out of the minor leagues and they come up and become stars. Doesn't happen all that much with our Philadelphia Phillies, does it?
It does
and
not.
That's on Klinchak, too.
It certainly
is. The team was terrible for all those years, and they accumulated virtually no talent. No, really, I mean, I'm talking about like Marlon Acuna Jr., Alonso, Yordan Alvarez,
Juan
Aquino.
Soto. Right, yeah, like here's the thing.
Soto.
It feels like, you know, they're going to have a nucleus, and it's a pretty good, you know, there's pretty good players like Scott Kingery and maybe Reese and Haseley, but none of those guys, you know, they're not in the same league as Juan Soto.
Good players.
Yeah, they're good players. It's hard to win consistently, and Mike, I always appreciate it, when you don't have those impact players. You have to go buy the impact players. That's not a very sustainable thing, and none of this is going to change if the guy that's making the pitching changes or writing the lineup card changes. It is a Band-Aid for bigger problems. And I've been saying this since July, and I'll continue to say it when we get to next year and they're still bleeding and we're pretending the Band-Aid is at fault. No. I'm not going to blame Buck Showalter next year if they're about a 500 team. Just like I didn't blame Gabe Kapler this year when they were about a 500 team. That's on the front office. Valentino's on the sell. I believe Valentino was live and witnessing one of the great moments in Philadelphia sports history. Is that right, buddy?
That's right. How you doing tonight?
Good. What's up? Well, tell us about it.
Oh, man, it was incredible. It was really incredible, man. I haven't been to a Sixers game since 08 when I had done a halftime martial arts demonstration down there. But it was just incredible. And what happened is that the crowd actually urged Ben Simmons to hit the three-pointer. And I don't think that happens in regular season. But since this is like a preseason scrimmage game against China, Ben Simmons was driving the ball down the court. He was around center court, and then the crowd just started chanting three-pointer, three-pointer. The whole Wells Fargo Center just started chanting this. Then Ben hesitated for a second, and then he hit the three-pointer, and the whole place just went crazy, man.
I love
it. Absolutely crazy.
Valentino, I love it. And here's what I hope. You know, it's one thing, you know, whatever. He made it compared to if he missed it. I just love that he took the shot because that, I think half the battle here is just a willingness to shoot the ball. I don't think he's going to shoot a very high percentage, and I'm okay with that. But if he's just willing to shoot it, it changes everything.
It's a hell of a confidence builder, I think.
Yeah.
And it's a great way to start, you know, to start the season for the Sixers.
It is.
And it's going to make me want to go down there more.
Well, look, we know they're going to be a good team. Valentino, I appreciate the call, and I'm glad you got to see it tonight. Witness history down at the Wells Fargo Center. We know the Sixers are going to be a good team. Like with them, it's about the details of it. It's like, how good can they be? How good are they going to look? With the team they've assembled, as long as they stay healthy, which is a caveat for every team, it's not usually a caveat in the NBA because the NBA is not like baseball with pitchers' arms or football with every player. Basketball players typically stay healthy. With them, it's a caveat because of Joel Embiid mostly and some of the age they have with Horford. But we know with the Sixers by now, after two straight years of being a good team, if they're healthy, they're going to win in the 50s. That's it. Like, I'd be shocked if this team has relative health and does not win 50-plus basketball games. Shocked. So that it's not about that. It's about can Ben Simmons progress from whatever we call tonight, historic, symbolic, special, a three versus a Chinese team, whatever you want to label it as, can he progress from tonight to becoming a, what's the word we're looking for here, Tucker? What's the word he needs to become? A willing, capable, not awful,
adequate.
So would adequate be average or slightly below average?
I mean, adequate, capable, mediocre is kind of somewhere in there. You're not expecting him to be Kyle Korver or Klay Thompson, right? He's not going to shoot 40% from three.
I mean, if he's Klay Thompson, he'll win an MVP one day.
He'd be the greatest basketball player ever.
Yeah, with his skill set, if he becomes Klay Thompson shooting. So, yeah, no one expects that. If he could just be one of those words Tucker used there. Just don't be a coward. Like, just shoot the ball when you're open and make it once in a while. I think we'll all be happy, and I think we'll set the Sixers up for some success here. Doug is in Connecticut. What's up, Doug?
What's up, Joe? I haven't spoken to you since the Redskins game. You know, I think we probably both feel like Carson's done pretty good.
Yeah, you know? I think I would describe him exactly that way so far this year. He's played pretty good.
Pretty good and pretty healthy, we think, some of the hits he's taken, some of the way he's been bent, some of the way he's had to throw, you know, awesome throws here and there, but I'm really excited for these next three games. I'm really excited to see this team just hopefully get out on the road, bond more as a unit. We know, I guess I'm kind of picturing this team with an addition. You know, one of the things I do daily is Eagles rumors, you know what I mean?
Yep.
I Google NASDAQ, I Google, you know, go on Facebook, and I Google see what's going on, what rumors are out there. And as much as they were talking about,
Jalen Ramsey?
Yeah, thank you. You know, Chris Harris and Von Miller are exciting names to me. And, you know, I love the team we got now, and I really like how they played defensively, you know, in Green Bay, and they're stopping the run, and defensively against the Jets, and we know that's not, you know, that's not the best win, but they did what they did. And, you know, I'm really feeling like we're going to come out of this three-game stretch winning at least two of these games, if not all of them. I don't think we're going to lose them all. I don't think we're going to – I'm just excited to see what happens.
I am too. And, Doug, I'm with you on Chris Harris. I think that – look, Jalen Ramsey is a better player, but when you look at the way it's been reported and how much Jacksonville might want for him, the idea of giving up two or more first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey versus maybe a third or a fourth for Chris Harris, it just feels like one makes so much more sense. And, Doug, it feels like Chris Harris could be this year's Golden Tate for Howie, where it's a good player, last year of his contract. And here's what I like most about Harris, Doug. He is versatile. He could play in or out. So regardless of what happens with the rest of these corners, like, you could play Harris wherever you need to, and he fits with anybody else.
Yeah. And I feel like Sidney Jones is just not going to – you know, I don't like talking negatively about players. I don't. But he just doesn't seem like he has the speed that we thought he was going to have coming out of college. And, you know, I feel better about Russell Douglas. At least I think that he can cover a receiver for those first 10 yards. He may need help deeper, but he's cocky. He's got that – you feel like he's confident in those first 10, 15 yards. Like, he's going to lock somebody down if he uses technique. But Sidney's just, he can't stay on the field. And I really feel like we're going to need a cornerback, if not a defensive end as well. But I'm really excited about these guys. We're not playing as good as we can. It's early. We know the Cowboys are right there. And we just got to keep going. We just got to keep stacking these wins.
I like what you said there, too. And, Doug, I always appreciate it. Let's talk soon about the Birds. I like the way he said that about kind of a bonding thing. This could be, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't nervous about this stretch. They're playing three really good teams on the road, back to back to back. The third game of a three-game road trip is always, always difficult. Now, and Buffalo's got a good team this year, so that makes it doubly difficult. So this could be hard. But there is something about this. Like, if the Eagles could find a way to go 2-1, it would galvanize them. Like, if they find a way to win two out of these three games, I could see it being the springboard to something they talk about at the end of the year when they make the playoffs. Like, that was the moment that their season turned, that they knew, that they believed in each other, all those kind of cliches, but it's real. So this is, it's going to be telling. It's going to be telling because they go up against great third down defenses, three games in a row on the road, and it'll be a major test. Like, Carson Wentz, I agree with what Doug just said there. He's played pretty good this season. Not great, not special, not poor by any stretch. Over five games, pretty good, pretty well, whatever, you know, adjective you want to use. If he plays really well or excellent over these three games, that would be impressive. 888-729-9494, #9494. When we come back, your phone calls, John Middleton. If you believe in your front office the way you say you do, let Matt Klentak pick the manager, which in turn would be keeping Gabe Kapler. On the Eagles, do you see this team turning from good to great? Which, they're good right now. I don't see the recipe for greatness unless, as Tucker mentioned earlier, they could continue to sustain, which is what they're good at, third down and red zone stuff. We come back, your calls, and we'll have Tucker's take for the night coming up on the evening show, Sports Radio 94 WIP. I am all for all of the ripping of Minnesota fans that we could do this week. They proved themselves to be the softest fan base ever when they came here to Philadelphia for the NFC title game a couple years ago. Tucker, what do you think about Minnesota sports fans?
Who's softer, Minnesota or New Orleans?
Minnesota fans are softer, and New Orleans fans are sadder. I've never seen a sadder fan base than a six-month cry for help after a missed call. They boycotted the Super Bowl last year, too, right?
Like, they lost on a Hail Mary, and that was their issue. And then, obviously, they lost on a bad call. But that's 2 years in a row where they act like they just had, you know, their hearts ripped out of them.
Yeah, as if it wasn't for Drew Brees throwing an interception in the title game or Sean Payton coaching a bad game. Like, those things didn't happen.
No, it's all because of the officials or some divine intervention.
Yes. As far as Minnesota, though, I'm excited for this game for a lot of reasons. One, it's a big game. And I didn't mention this, and we'll talk about it more during the week. The NFC's really deep. I was saying this in the summer. It's playing out even more than I thought because before the year, I was kind of projecting, you know, there could be maybe 11 or 12 NFC teams that are good. Now, we'll see how many games each of those teams win. They're going to play each other a lot in division games. I don't expect to have 10 or 11 double-digit win teams, but there are, as I look at it right now, 11 NFC teams that have the capability of winning 10 games. Eagles are obviously among that group. But like that means every one of these NFC games, these tiebreaker games, they're going to matter. There's someone in the NFC. I'm just going to name some teams for you. Seattle, San Francisco, the Rams, the Eagles, the Cowboys, Packers, Vikings, Lions, Bears. That's 9 teams. They all can't go to the playoffs. In fact, because you have to have someone win the South, I didn't include a South team in there. Of those 9 teams, only 5 can go to the playoffs. That seems like a good team or two is going to stay home, Tucker.
Yeah, I mean, looking just quickly at the NFC standings, outside of the Giants, the Redskins,
Arizona
and Atlanta, maybe Tampa Bay as well.
Like, Tampa's kind of weird, but probably not, but maybe.
Right, but that's 5 teams. Like, those are the only teams you can really write off right now.
So that means 11 look good. And you know, let's say one of those teams has injuries, they fall off. That's 10. Like, it's good, and over the next 3 games, if you could script the way this goes, Minnesota's the game you want to win, and obviously Dallas. The Buffalo game would be cake and gravy, but if you can get the 2 to start it and win, you know, the 2 NFC games, that's important. We'll get to Tucker's take in a second. Let's grab Angelo on the cell. What's up, Angelo?
Hey, by the way, I hate the Vikings and I hate the Saints, so it's pretty funny what you said.
Yeah, their fans are a bunch of babies, plus the teams. Yeah, I want to beat the teams, too.
Yeah, exactly. So my point is going to be about the Phillies, and I completely agree with you with respect to Middleton, but I got a different take on it. We're talking about the same guy who had to seal the deal with Harper and brought Klentak along with him as like this little son that couldn't get the deal done, so I'm just going to do it myself. So maybe he's just another one of these billionaires that's really obnoxious, really condescending, but can't make a decision because obviously he didn't do anything all year, but maybe he doesn't trust his GM and his other guy, and he just let them hang themselves, and now he's just going to let them wait and fester and get rid of them in a week or so. I don't know. What else can it be?
Yeah.
He can't go on the air and say he's an elite manager. He can't think he's an elite GM. There's no way.
I agree. Unless, Angela, he doesn't understand, like he doesn't get what he's seeing in terms of baseball, which is scary because, like you just said, there's no way you could watch the teams that have made the playoffs the last couple of years, like the Yankees and the Astros and the Dodgers, and say that our GM here is anything close to those guys. It's nuts.
But think about it. He went to Las Vegas, and he made the deal for Harper, and I don't remember anybody saying, what the hell is Klentak doing? Sitting in the back seat just dribbling? I mean, that's so embarrassing for the owner to make the deal, and you can't even trust that your GM can do it on his own.
Well, it is. It's not good. No, you're right, Angela, and I will say this, and I always appreciate your call, man, and I appreciate your perspective. I have a lot of fears about the future of the Phillies here and with John Middleton as the owner and just in general with the talent they have. But one of them is there's already been a lot of connection to Anthony Rendon and Gerrit Cole. Great. They're great players. I'd love to have either of them here, either playing third base or pitching. The Phillies need them. You know, the Yankees have bought players for a long time. Well, they win. And the Phillies could use those guys. But there's a weird thing going on here with Scott Boras. And it feels like he has a very easily manipulated owner in John Middleton that feels desperate to win and will spend a lot of money for Scott Boras players. Think about the last few years, Jake Arrieta and Bryce Harper, and now this year both Rendon and Cole are Boras guys. And I just think about the Detroit Tigers a few years ago. They became the Scott Boras landing pad. Whenever he needed a guy, you know, $200 million, oh, just go to Detroit. They'll give you the money. They never won a thing. They had some talent, but it wasn't sustainable, and then they fell apart, and now they're a bad team. A lot of weird vibes that Middleton is just going to fly by the seat of his pants with this decision and then just buy a player and expect to win. It's not a sustainable model. All right. Every night, we have a special segment here on the evening show. We debuted it last week. It's called Tucker's Take. And here is the part of this that is full disclosure to you, the audience. I have no idea what Tucker's going to say here. It could be about sports. It could be about non-sports. It could be about John Middleton, Ben Simmons. I don't know where this is going. Tucker, what do you got for us tonight?
So for tonight, we'll stick with sports tonight.
All right.
Wide receiver in the NFL, most overvalued position in all of sports.
Interesting. Well, I mean, are you sure? Because I've heard a lot this week that the Eagles need more wide receivers because they're not good enough around Carson Wentz.
So the issue is, this isn't to say that you can win without adequate wide receiving, right? Like, we saw that in 2016 with Carson Wentz when they lined up with Jordan Matthews and Dorial Green-Beckham.
I always forget Dorial Green-Beckham exists. Who's the other guy who's fast? He's here for 10 minutes. Bryce Treggs.
Remember him?
He sat him down for the Green Bay game after he lined up offside and dropped the pass in Seattle.
Yeah. Yeah, just a lot of terrible, terrible memories.
It was awful.
So you obviously need adequate wide receiving, just like you need adequate talent at any position in the NFL. But to spend $20 million on a guy like Odell Beckham Jr. or Julio Jones or A.J. Green, anyone in that kind of league, quite honestly, the value on that return isn't going to be worth it.
They never win. I mean, think about the NFL and the wide receiver position over the last 20 years. And we could probably go, I mean, Jerry Rice is the exception because he's the greatest receiver ever. He played in a dynasty. But the last 20 years, the best receivers, have they won a ring? Randy Moss is ringless.
Randy Moss didn't. I mean, Marvin Harrison did, I believe, with Peyton Manning.
He did in 06 with Peyton Manning. T.O. didn't.
I mean, he had the greatest show on turf, but that's, you know, over 20 years ago now at this point with Holt and Bruce.
And that was more of a duo. I don't know how much they're paying those guys. But the individual best receivers, would you say T.O.?
Right.
Moss?
Ringless.
Fitzgerald?
Ringless. Not for lack of trying. But.
No. Antonio Brown? Ringless.
Yeah. He's the one guy up until this year that I would have said has an impact on the game for all 60 minutes. Because most wide receivers you can kind of scheme out if you're a defensive coordinator.
Well,
especially
Belichick's
in the final 5 minutes.
For years.
Antonio Brown is the only guy I've ever seen that can consistently get open in, like, crunch time. Like, you need 20 yards, he can run a 20-yard out and get those yards for you.
Unfortunately for him, he went crazy, and he's out of the league now.
Yeah.
But look, I mean, to go to your point, I like this take. To go to Tucker's point, the Raiders lost Antonio Brown before the season started. They've been fine.
Yeah.
They just beat the Bears.
Like I said, like, wide receiver, it feels so dependent on so many other things that spending that kind of money on an elite talent like Antonio Brown's, like Julio Jones, while it's great to have that kind of luxury, it's not usually worth what you're getting compared to spending that kind of money on a left tackle or a defensive end.
Julio Jones, I would say A.J. Green the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Andre Johnson had a great run.
Yeah.
None of these guys ever won a thing.
No. And obviously, like, they've won conferences, right? Like, Julio Jones made it to the Super Bowl.
But no rings.
Larry Fitzgerald, one of the greatest postseason contributors of all time. But even if you look back at that Green Bay game, obviously Davante Adams got hurt at the end, but he had 150 yards in the first half.
They lost.
Or in the first quarter. He was the best player on the field, and they were still behind at halftime.
Well, I mean, I think the best example of this right now is Odell Beckham Jr. Odell Beckham Jr. is an unbelievable talent. I mean, he's a guy that if you never watched football before and you put a game on he was in, you'd say, oh, he's the best player on the field.
He genuinely looks like he's playing a different game than everybody else when he has the ball in his hands.
Teams never win. Like, since he got to the NFL, I don't have the numbers in front of me. We could probably figure them out in a few seconds here. Odell Beckham Jr. has to be like 20 games under 500 in the NFL. And I know wide receivers don't win and lose games, but that's basically Tucker's take here. That they're paid, but their return on the investment doesn't work. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. with the Giants, all they did is lose. He goes to the Browns, and guess what they've done so far? Lose.
Yeah, I mean, he averaged 92 yards a game with the Giants.
Which has to be like one of the top marks of any
receiver
ever.
His rookie year, he averaged 108 yards per game. That's just insane. I mean, the guy has put up ridiculous numbers.
And he's playing with a quarterback that everyone agrees has been pretty much washed for a few
years. Right. I mean, if you want to point this as wide receivers being dependent on great quarterbacking, that's not really the case.
Nope.
If you want to look at his production, or even Larry Fitzgerald's production for most of his career, the guy who's now the second leading receiver all time.
Yeah, no, he had Matt Leinart early in his career. He's had, just a bunch of just garbage quarterbacks.
The ghost of Carson Palmer. Yeah, he's had a lot of people.
Yep, and he's been waiting now, and maybe he has a good one now, but he's a you know, first-round pick rookie in Kyler Murray. It's crazy. And every year, every draft, every free agency period, we do the same thing. Like, we talk ourselves into this stuff mattering. You know, it doesn't. Like when the Beckham thing happened, it was like, oh, my goodness. Odell Beckham got traded. Odell Beckham's going to play for what, an 8-18 this year? I don't know. Wherever the Browns are going to go, they're not going to the Super Bowl.
No.
It's amazing. It is the most – for as much time as we spend talking about the wide receiver position and the stars that position, it doesn't translate. I would argue, to go off a Tucker's take here, I would argue that we spend more time on the on how we've devalued running back, and we don't spend enough time talking about how we should devalue wide receiver.
Oh, and obviously, like, I think running back is less valuable than a wide receiver. Like, we've seen with the Eagles, both positions you can get by, like I said, with adequate players. But running back has been devalued by most NFL franchises. They've realized you can find capable running backs late in drafts, cheap free agents, things like that. Wide receivers, people still feel the need to spend incredible resources on that position.
As with everything in the NFL, the answer is always in New England, and we always pretend it's not happening. Like, that's the look. They've never spent on running backs. They cycle them in and out. They'll draft him, in the first round once in a while. Like,
I mean, they drafted Sonny Michel.
Michelle, but that they won't pay him when it's time to pay him.
No,
they'll move on. And then wide receivers, since Randy Moss, and that was the only reason they got Randy Moss in New England. Same thing with Antonio Brown. It was basically free.
Oh, like, yeah.
They'll take on any great talent basically for free, but they didn't pay Randy Moss.
Mm-mm.
Like, look at their receivers they've won with the last 20 years. There's way more Troy Browns and Deion Branches and Chris Hogans and Wes Welkers than there are great players. Like, it's always the Patriots that have the blueprint, and the rest of the NFL's like, yeah, we'll do it our way. And then they don't win, and the Patriots win. That's been the NFL now for 20 years. 888-729-9494, #9494. That is how you hop in. We'll come back, your phone calls, and I will give you an update here on the baseball playoffs, because if the Phillies are waiting for a clean and total off day in the Major League Baseball playoff calendar to do their announcement, well, feels like we're not going to get one of those, at least for a couple days. 888-729-9494, Sports Radio 94 WIP.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.